Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you here today on American Family Radio. HopeForTheCaregiver.com, where everything on this program is caregiver-related. Why? Well, I'm glad you asked. Because 65 million Americans right now serve as a family caregiver. It's a tough job. It's a tough job. Just look, go out to my website and look at my face. It's a tough job. Don't let that happen to somebody you love. At HopeForTheCaregiver.com. I'm glad you're with us today. I want to run something by you very quickly. I just want to jump right into this. Following the assassination attempt last week at the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner, I noticed something that I see on a regular basis with this kind of stuff. I saw this enormous rush to the microphones from media and members of Congress and so forth. We need to tone it down. We need to be better. We need to lower the temperature. And the statements just came out, you know, almost reflexively. You know, like the script was already there. They had the note cards. We need to do this. We need to do this. And I remember this scene, and you don't have to watch the movie, but I remember this scene in Blazing Saddles where Mel Brooks played this just worthless governor named William J. LePetitmaine. And he gathered his cabinet together and he was outraged. He said, "Gentlemen, we need to do something to protect our phony baloney jobs." And there was a bunch of harumps from his cabinet. Harump, harump, harump. And one guy didn't, he said, "I didn't get a harump out of you." And it's just, they're all echoing the same thing. And it was absurd. And it was meant to be absurd. But I watched what happens in the aftermath of things like this, particularly just this last week. I see the same thing. They're all just sitting around just saying harump. And we need to do this. We need to do this. And their language is more polished and the setting's more formal. But the instinct is still the same for these people. And it's a unified sound that just sounds carefully rehearsed. That's what I see when I see these people. We need to tone it down. And so I just got a question. Who's we? Who is we? The rush to say we need to tone it down or that both sides must do so reveals really to me something else. And the media knows that it has a credibility problem. If nothing else, they know they got a ratings problem. But what it refuses to admit is that it has an ownership problem as well. We is a convenient place to hide behind. The same people now saying we have spent years writing and rehearsing the very script that they're now decrying. They didn't simply argue policy or question judgment. They reached for language that cast their opponents as existential threats and terms like Hitler and fascist as routine descriptors rather than, you know, historically loaded warnings, I guess, is what they were, you know, what you could make a case for, but that's not what they were doing. And by the way, they did this against George W. Bush, too, 20-something years ago. I remember seeing this. You know, some of us are older and can remember when they did it with Reagan. And that kind of language doesn't stay contained. It shapes how the listener understands the stakes. It tells them that what they're seeing is not a disagreement, but it's a moral emergency. Remember Joe Biden get up there and said, it's an existential threat. Donald Trump is an existential threat to our country. Well, guess what? Some people take that seriously. And that kind of language, it wraps around people and then they act on it. And there will always be someone who hears that not as a metaphor, but as instructions. And that's what this kid was. You look at his manifesto and he's reading out the very things that you could hear on MSNBC or MSLSD or whatever they call it now. You could hear that regularly. That kind of inflammatory stuff from late night shows and everything else. And I'm thinking, wow, they're saying we need to tone it down. We need to reach across the aisle. We need to do this. We need to do this. But it doesn't excuse the person who acts, by the way. But the responsibility for that guy, that's his issue, and he's going to have to deal with it. But it does expose the gap between those who help set the tone and those who later step forward to warn about it. And the problem is not the call for restraint. The problem is the distance they're building into the language. What would it sound like if that distance were removed? Not we need to dial it back, but I need to. Not we have to be more careful, but I have to be more careful. That's the kind of sentence that lands differently because it costs something and it doesn't distribute the burden. It accepts it. And I did not learn that in Washington. And I doubt that anybody else will either. I learned it as a caregiver. There are days when everything compresses at once on me. You're a caregiver. Tell me you've had those kind of days when the routine just collapses. You get a phone call, the body gives out, you know, everything feels like it's just descending on you. You're getting dumped on. And sometimes that's true. But caregiving has a way of stripping away the illusion, including the ones that I prefer to keep about myself. And I've come to understand that some days I'm the statue and some days I'm the pigeon. And I have to admit that. There's no we that I can hide behind like these people in the media and Congress and everything else are saying. We need to tone it down. No, I got to do this. I make impatient decisions in the middle of exhaustion. I don't know if you've ever done that or not. I speak more sharply than I should. You ever done that? Or in some ways, I try to elevate myself at somebody else's expense. And that doesn't excuse any of it. I got to own it. I'm guilty of it. I can't imagine that there is anyone who would not agree that Washington, D.C. has a massive hypocrisy problem and that the media has a major credibility problem. But I also remember that old axiom, if you got it, you can spot it. Well, if you spot it, sometimes that means you got it. And I've done the same thing that they're doing, but I've done it in smaller rooms with the smaller stakes and there's less cameras. But I've used tone, timing, and words to shift blame around, to justify myself, to make someone else carry what was mine to own. And that recognition has steadied me more than any sweeping call that we need to do better. All of us need to do better. You know, you remember that when you were in school and you knew there was one kid that was just being a certain way, but the teacher punished the entire class for it. Instead of calling out the one person that we all knew was doing it because we didn't want to be confrontational or whatever. I don't know. Didn't want to single them out, but that always made me mad. That's the kid that's doing it. Deal with that kid. But in my case, I found that I'm the kid that's doing it. And I'm not in a position to correct this culture of ours that rewards outrage and then acts surprised when it produces consequence. I'm not in a position to correct that. I mean, I'm just me. But I am in a position, I'm in a great position to confront myself with the truth. And when you speak in first person plural, it spreads the blame until it disappears. We, us, our. But when you speak in first person singular, there's no more cover. This is where we live. I own this. I need to do this. And once the cover is gone, then something else becomes possible. It's not performance, it's not the statements, it's not that sculpted outrage that you saw in the media and everything else from after last weekend. None of that's there anymore. It's repentance. Not we will do better, but I will do better. I will turn from this. And that's where leadership begins. Not on a stage, not behind a podium, not in a ballroom full of cameras, but in decisions of one single person owning what is theirs to own. Life, whether it unfolds in Washington or in a hospital room. It's shaped the same way. One voice, one decision, one sentence at a time. Which means it can be corrected the same way. Not we, but I. I will do this. I will look at my own stuff and I will deal with my own behavior. And that is the beginning of repentance. And that is the beginning of hope. For the caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. We will be right back.
How about this? Some actual good news on the healthcare front, even as costs just keep skyrocketing. So if you're 65 or older, MediShare now offers MediShare 65 Plus. Call them. You can talk to them about this. A lot of people are taking advantage of this now because even if you have Medicare Parts A and B, you know there are out-of-pocket things, deductibles and copays that just keep going up. And the whole point is to help you by giving you a low, consistent monthly payment that fills in the gaps. In fact, I can tell you how much MediShare 65 Plus is, for example. It's $99 a month up to age 75. It keeps costs under control. That helps with peace of mind. MediShare is trusted, too. It's been around for 30 years, and it's a community of people who help each other. Business owners, retirees, pastors, teachers. People love being part of it. Here's the number you can call now. They are easy to talk to. Call 833-45-BIBLE. That's 833-45-BIBLE, 833-45-BIBLE.
The Word of God tells us many times in one form or another, fear not. Many people are very fearful about some of the many perils and dangerous happenings that are going on in the world. Psalm 91 verses 1 and 2 tell us, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust." I'm Joseph Parker, and we here at the American Family Association would like to remind you, fear not. Put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to both encourage and challenge you to aggressively put your faith to work. And one way to do that is to pray Psalm 91 daily for yourself and your family and keep your trust in Him. If you'd like to get a copy of the Psalm 91 prayer for yourself, email us here at psalm91@afa.net. Again, that's psalm91@afa.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Glad to be with you today. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. Hey, by the way, if you go out to the website, you'll see a link to my Substack. And I wrote about what I talked about in the last block. And I have that. And I've got several others that you'll find that'll be very meaningful to you. And it's caregiver.substack.com. And I put video, audio, print, everything is out there as far as the content that I'm trying to put out there for my fellow caregivers. I'm real passionate about this, as you could tell. I love being able to speak into these things with things that I've learned along the way as a caregiver. There's not... there's quite frankly, there's nobody out there that's been doing this for 40 years that has a national radio program. So I'm kind of drawing on this vast experience and say, okay, here's what I field tested along the way. These are principles that I'm not thinking about. I am living out because it has to be applicable in my situation. Otherwise, I'm not going to go there. And that brings me to something I wanted to just run by you. Today in this block, I've been resuming my piano lessons. I took piano lessons for a while there, and I had to stop because Gracie went in the hospital and didn't have access to a piano and all that kind of stuff. So I'm back into that groove now where I'm showing up every week and doing this, and I'm taking gospel music lessons, learning how to play in gospel music. Now I'm not talking about country gospel. I'm talking about, you know, in black gospel, where you're throwing in really rich chords, rhythmic stuff, really pushing myself as a musician. I've been a pianist for a very long time. I majored in music, composition and arranging. I know theory, but there are things that I really want to incorporate more into my music and to be better at it. I will never be able to be a concert pianist. I gave that up a long time ago. I've actually met several concert pianists, including Van Cliburn, when I was young. But I had a friend that was an astounding pianist, and he quit playing. He just quit playing the piano because he said, "I remember how good I used to be, and I can't keep that up." And I thought, wow, that's just tragic. And I don't want to do that. I want to be able to play for the rest of my life and enjoy it, and particularly with the hymns and the music that I do and so forth. And so I am pushing myself to do this, and it's tough. I mean, there's a Zoom class you show up, there's written material, there's a lot of practice involved. And I do this because I got nothing else to do. No, of course not. I've got plenty to do. But why do I do this? Because I think as caregivers, it is incredibly important to push ourselves, to stay sharp, to learn, to keep our minds acute. And this is one way that I do it. I don't want to just put my life on hold. And then at the end of my caregiving, then I go out and resume my life. Well, I'm 40 years into this, so I can't do that. And I see a lot of caregivers who do that, who put their life on hold and then try to pick it back up when caregiving is over, if that ever happens. And I decided a long time ago for me that I was going to do what it was in my power to do every year, to try to learn something, to learn a new skill, to improve myself, to enhance myself in the job market, even if I'm not necessarily looking for a job. You know, and I've recommended my fellow caregivers taking classes, learning computers, learning how to do such and such. If you want to write a book, for example, a lot of you have great stories to tell. A lot of you write poems, you journal, you got great things to say. And do you push yourself to learn how to be a better writer? That's one of the things that I've been doing for a long time. And I never thought of myself as a writer. I really didn't. In fact, if you look back at my grades in high school, you would agree that, no, Peter should not write. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I found out I had something to say. But I had to train myself on how to speak properly and write properly. And it's work. And I've taken courses. I've done workshops. I have studied and I've practiced. The same thing with piano. Well, what about you? What's going on in your life? What are you doing that's pushing you? Are you studying? Are you getting into gardening or whatever? I don't know. Whatever it is, your thing that you push yourself to be excellent at, it that it cost you a little bit of effort and time. I also study theology extensively. And I'll tell you exactly why. Because I had a theology professor who's still my mentor. He listens to this program. And he told me from the beginning, he said, look, if you go down this path and you start studying theology, what it's going to do is going to give precision to your thinking. And I didn't understand that until I got into it. And he was exactly right. And what does a caregiver need more than precision thinking? You know, because we're hit from all sides. And so you've heard me say this many times, when I'm faced with these things, Christian, what do you believe? And I go back to, what do I believe? Why do I believe it? Am I prepared to not convince myself or convince you? Am I reminding myself of these things? And that's what I do. I'm just simply reminding myself, because I have gospel amnesia and I need to remind myself of these things. And so I ask you to really consider, is there something that you can spend some time with every week as a discipline? If it's music, if it's art, if it's literature, poetry, writing, theology, all the above. I've started when my youngest son graduated from high school. The kids were grown and they were leaving the house. And you know what I did? That next day, right after the graduation, the next day, I went in and signed up for martial arts lessons, and I became a second degree black belt. And people say, well, Peter, how do you find the time? I don't find the time. I make the time, because it is important to do these things. Why am I taking piano lessons? I can play. I can play just fine. I want to play better. I want to learn more. I want to push my mind to think and to stretch myself. I do not want to be sitting around twiddling my thumbs and watching reruns of Family Feud when I'm older. So I'm pushing my mind right now to stay sharp and to stay alert. And quite frankly, I need to be able to do that. And it helps me do it. And I'm asking you to give some consideration to yourself. And some of you have not yet taken on maybe starting your own business. I've had to learn it the hard way, and I wish somebody had come alongside of me and said, hey, you know what? You're living with a pretty brutal set of circumstances where you're having to be around Gracie all the time. And it's hard to go and have a career and have a job and go to work somewhere and without having somebody there at the house to look after her, to pay somebody to be there for her. You know, if I replaced me, for example, in the home, while I went to a job site somewhere to work, doesn't matter where, whether it's in the car business or any kind of retail business, or if I was working in an accounting office, if I was a lawyer, doesn't matter. Whatever I did, 40 hours a week, if I had to pay somebody to stay with Gracie to replace me in the home, minimum, you're looking at $52,000 a year, $25 an hour, and sometimes you can't even get it for that low. So you're looking at, and that's if they don't call in sick. So tell me a job that you can go to and immediately take a $52,000 pay cut, minimum. You see how that works? Somebody's got to be there, and that's just for 40 hours. There's 168 hours in the week, and I couldn't figure out how to leave the home and make a living and have somebody that is here for Gracie while I'm gone. And then, by the way, when I come back home, then I'm on duty. So there's no break. There's no let up. I'm either working at work or I'm working at home. And that's the reality of my life. That's probably the reality of a lot of your lives. So what do you do? And I started my own business, but I didn't have anybody in the church or that in my circle that were good business people that ever came alongside and say, hey, you've got some ideas, or let's talk about your ideas and let's maybe develop a business plan for you so you can work at home and take care of Gracie, but make a good living and so forth. Nobody ever told me this. Nobody ever pulled me aside and said, let's work with you on this. And so I've kind of had to forage for all of this on my own. Well, I don't think we should do that anymore. Do you? I think there are people in churches, good businessmen and women, who could help sit down with somebody and develop a creative plan. It may not be perfect. It won't be perfect. It may not be attainable easily. Probably won't be. But it's something you could start working towards. What do you like to do? What are you good at doing? What are your thoughts? What are businesses available for you, home-based businesses that you could work around your loved one and create wealth coming in that is not contingent to you punching a clock? Would you not agree that it would be more ideal for caregivers to figure out how to have a home-based business or work from home to be able to take care of their loved one? COVID changed a lot of that for many people. And I know that there are a lot of moves to get people back in the office place and all that kind of, I understand all that. But there are opportunities that we can do, but somebody may have to sit down and teach us and show us. And we have a better shot at it if we make ourselves more marketable in the meantime. If we're learning something, if we're pushing ourselves to learn better skills on our computer, if we're spending some time understanding what it is that we're good at. Do you know what you're good at? Do you know what you can do that has value to the marketplace? And if so, would you be willing to sit down with somebody and maybe map out, okay, how can I make money at this? How can I turn this into something that would help me be sustained while I take care of somebody who requires me to be with them most of the time? You see where I'm going with this? And if you're a church member who is a really good business person and thinks like this, and you know of somebody, or if you're a pastor listening, you know somebody like that, that's a good business person like that, see if you can't match them up. Try to connect with somebody. Look for that single mom with a special needs child. Look for that family that's struggling. Look for that husband who's taking care of his wife for decades. Those are things that we can do. Come together. Scripture says, bear one another's burdens. What a great way to do that is come together and build one another up to create a sustainable infrastructure to support folks who are carrying these very difficult loads. Something to think about as we become healthier caregivers, and healthy caregivers make better caregivers. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back.
Today's issues.
A lot to talk about. A lot in the news. It's a good thing because this show would not exist had we not have news.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we didn't have issues, we couldn't have today's issues.
Right.
Got to be some issues somewhere.
That would be a good promo for our show.
Yeah.
One thing we can promise you, we're not going to go over our personal issues.
Okay. Right. I personally have issues, but that's what I was talking about.
That's right.
Today's issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Culture is a product of us being placed in a particular location, and it is God's desire that his light bearers would culture or cultivate a particular area.
Join Abraham Hamilton III as he presents the biblical case for cultural engagement. It's a powerful video resource from the American Family Association's Cultural Institute series.
You and I create the culture of our country.
Visit afastore.net.
Have you ever repeatedly reminded your kids about an upcoming event, only to have them shocked when it's time to go, claiming, "You never told me that"? Well, our Savior had a similar experience. If you only witnessed the disciples' reaction to Christ's crucifixion, you might think his death came without warning. But Scripture reveals otherwise. Jesus told his disciples repeatedly that he would be arrested, killed, and raised to life. Take Matthew 16:21. Which says he began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things and be killed and be raised up on the third day. The problem wasn't lack of information. It was the disciples' inability to accept it. How about you? Will you trust Jesus when he says, "I will come again"? This is Tim Moore wishing you Godspeed.
Find out what the Lord wants you to do while you await his soon return. Go to ChristInProphecy.org.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, hopeforthecaregiver.com, hopeforthecaregiver.com. I want to just button up one more thing that I talked about in the last block about mentoring people, helping people, assist people. Let me bring it down to the bottom shelf, not because I want to talk down, because I know your arms are tired, okay? And I don't want you to have to reach too hard for this. I want to bring it down to something real simple. I've got a friend of mine. We've been friends for a long time, and just a lovely lady. And she is a full-time caregiver right now. She's really good at sewing and making curtains and things such as that. She's really good at it. And she loves doing it. She loves it. And she's made a living doing this. It's something simple that she can do at home, but she could put down in a moment and go take care of her husband. You see what I'm talking about now? If that's you, and if that's, well, you know, Peter, I'm pretty good at that too. I'm pretty good at hanging curtains. And I think I would like to be able to make curtains for people or set it up and, you know, that kind of thing. Before you go any further with that, sit down with somebody who's a really good business person in your church, in your community, in your family, and say, "Look, I'm trying," identify with the goal. The goal is not for you to open up the world's greatest curtain market. I mean, that may happen, but that's not the goal. The goal is to create a sustainable infrastructure where you could do what you're really good at, that is commercially marketable, that has value to the market, and can support you as you serve as a caregiver at a moment's notice. You may have to drop everything. Some of you may be really good fixing small engines and doing equipment repair like that. Weed eaters, lawnmowers, that kind of thing. You may be really good at this. Why not have a home-based business that does this? If not full-time, part-time. Work it out of your garage. And people can drop it off to you. You fix it. They come back and get it. And you build up a business model that supports your situation. You get tax advice on how to use your home and all those kinds of things, all the write-offs that are available to you. And you set this thing up from the ground floor that is built around you creating a sustainable infrastructure for you to serve as a caregiver, because you may be doing it for a long time. And quite frankly, you may enjoy it more. You'd rather be working on a small engine in your garage than having to go and, you know, schlep down to the whatever place and spend all day long with people that you don't necessarily want to be around with. I could say schlep, by the way. My last name's Rosenberger, so, and I've read The Joys of Yiddish. So I'm just throwing that out there. But, oh, it's funny. Just trust me. But that's what I'm talking about. But don't do that until you sit down with somebody and map it out. And again, what is the goal? Is the goal for you to create the world's greatest, largest, small engine repair shop east of the Mississippi kind of thing? No, the goal is for you to create a sustainable infrastructure financially for you to take care of your loved one, that you could stop and start at a moment's notice, that you can take care of whatever crisis is your, and then go back out to the garage and resume working on it. Maybe it's at 9 o'clock at night and you just need to detox a little bit from it. You just need to kind of decompress. And you say, you know what? I'm going to go work on this lawnmower. Or I'm going to go fix these curtains. Or I'm going to proofread this person's book. Maybe you don't require the kind of activity that is just constant blur of activity like my life. I'm always needing a proofreader. Of somebody who can go and look at my work. And there are other people that do the same. Maybe you can type or do medical dictation and things such as that. There are all kinds of things, but don't start it until you sit down and map it out of what does this look like? Where's this going to go? How much money can this bring in? What are my needs? And then what are the incorporation, do I need an LLC, all those kinds of things. And there's somebody in your circle that could answer those questions for you. Or there's somebody in your circle who knows somebody who could do that. And I think it's time to raise your hand and say that if you don't know where else to go, go to your pastor and say, you know, pastor, this is what I'm looking at. I heard this crazy guy on the radio talking about this. And he'll say, was that Peter Rosenberg? He said, oh, yeah, we know him. He's crazy. They would say that. Yes, I know that. But you could go and say, look, I'm looking at trying to do something that's going to keep us solvent and us from drowning and going bankrupt. And I can't keep taking off time from work. This thing is getting out of hand. I got to come up with something that's a little bit better. And I may have to bridge it or whatever. Is there anybody in your circle that you know of that might be able to give me some good counsel on this? To sit down with me. You know, help me set it up. I don't know anything about business. I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything, but here's what I do know. And if that doesn't work, if your pastor doesn't know somebody, if you don't know somebody in your circle, then reach out to me and maybe we can find somebody together, okay? But don't start with me, okay? Because I'm still running a full-time show here and a full-time caregiver. So do a little bit of legwork. And if you need legs, by the way, we recycle prosthetic legs at Standing With Hope. And I'm just kidding. StandingWithHope.com. But do a little bit of detective work. Think it through. Think it through. Maybe just take a pencil and paper and just say, okay, here's what I like to do. Here's what I'm good at doing. Here's what I have made some money doing. Maybe it was just a little bit of money. For example, here's another thing. I'm a good pianist, but in order for me to make money as a pianist, guess what? I have to go and play somewhere. And I will play at my church, but I'm there. I'm locked in. You know, I have to show up and do it. So it makes it a little bit challenging. Plus, I don't do weddings. Now, you can make really good money playing a wedding, but I don't do them. You know why? Because it consumes you for the whole weekend. And weddings are inflexible. They are just truly inflexible. I'll play funerals, and I will make every effort to be there for them, but weddings are inflexible. So I know off the top of my head, I'm not going to do a wedding. And number two, I really don't like doing weddings. There's way too much drama. I've done that before for many years, and I don't care how much I charge for it. I don't want to do it. And so, I mean, I got to really love this person or the check is so big that I can't turn it down because I just don't want to do it. But think about the danger of me doing a wedding with the constant crisis situations that I have in my life. it's a little bit, you know, daunting to think about. So I have to build that into it. I have to think it through. And maybe if you want, and if this is resonating with you, maybe we can spend more time on this, on this program, and start showing some of these built-in things that maybe we haven't all considered. But when you have a group conversation like this, even though I'm the one doing most of the talking, but we're all caregivers, we're all dealing with this. We got to think it through. What works for you? And it's not just having a little extra income. It's building an infrastructure that is built around the fact that, number one, you have to be flexible. Number two, you cannot keep normal hours. Number three, when you are away from home, things can happen, or you've got to make sure somebody's there or something. And you either got to be able to pay for somebody to be there, or you've got to arrange for you to be there. And again, $25 an hour is low in today's world. In most places, for any kind of CNA or a service, you're looking at $29 to $30 and sometimes more than that. And I would suggest to you that what I do for Gracie is a little harder to replace with $25 an hour. I think I can make that case. And that doesn't count the fact that the moment you're off the clock, you're on another clock. So in today's world, where you have so much technology available to you, right at your fingertips, imagine what you can do. And I've carved this out for myself, and it's flawed, and it's challenging at times, and it's hard to know, you know, where things are going to come. But I do everything from about 25 feet away from Gracie. For the most part, I can leave her for a little bit of time. I can go get out on a horse or do this, but I have to make arrangements for everything. I mean, I'm going to talk about this in the next block. I mean, I'm getting ready to go through some treatment stuff here with cancer. Yes, I have it. And, but we caught it in time. It's treatable. But I sat down with my doctor, and we went through some stuff. And then he said, "Do you have any questions?" I have two questions. Number one, how much care will I need post-op? Number two, how much care will I be able to provide post-op? I can't separate myself from this. I can't just go and recover. When I go down, it affects everything, my business, everything. And so I have to think this way. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe your situation is not quite the same, but mine is. And I have to think this way. And I told you that I'm field testing these things, these principles, in an extreme environment. And if these principles hold up in my environment, I have a good bit of confidence they're going to hold up in yours as well. And that's why I do these things. Because look, when you put the kind of thing that I deal with Gracie, where, I mean, last year, for example, you know, you've heard about businesses with 5-year plans. Well, last year we were in the hospital for 5 months. We were supposed to be down there for 6 weeks. We couldn't even have a 6-week plan. You know, how do you have a 5-year plan when you guys are like that? So, and I wrote my newest book that'll come out. My agent's got it and she's working with it right now. I wrote most of that while sitting beside her in the hospital, a lot of it in the ICU. I wrote my book before that, A Minute for Caregivers, 2 books before that. I wrote that when she was in the hospital for 3 months a couple of years ago. I would go down the hallway and just sit there and write, or I'd sit there right beside her. That's why my sentences are so short in the book, because I have to stop and start so much. I remember one time I was writing probably the biggest piece I've ever written. It was for Fox News, and I knew when I was writing it that it was going to be an important piece, and it turned out to be that way, it was. And I remember writing it, and Gracie kept calling me, and she wanted something. I said, hold on, baby. I need my whole brain for just a second. I need my, you know, I've actually had those conversations. I need my whole brain for just a second. And that's the way our life is, or at least that's the way my life is. And if these principles work in my life, would you be willing to take a step of faith and say, maybe they'll work in your life too? And then together we can come up with better strategies and plans of what we can do to become healthier caregivers. Financially healthier, emotionally healthier, physically healthier, spiritually healthier, because healthy caregivers make better caregivers. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, "I know what I'm going to do." And I was kind of startled. I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus." And I said, "Well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first?" But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Some years ago, a 9-year-old girl wrote a wonderful essay called "What is a Grandmother?"
Here's today's Dr. Dobson Minute with Dr. James Dobson.
This is what the child said. "Grandmothers don't have to do anything except to be there. They're old, so they shouldn't play hard or run. It is enough if they drive us to the market where the pretend horse is and to have lots of dimes ready. Or if they take us for walks, they should slow down past things like pretty leaves and caterpillars. Everybody should try to have a grandmother because they are the only grown-ups who have time." How's that for sheer wisdom from the pen of a child? Not only has this young author given us a marvelous picture of a loving grandmother, but she tells us in a few short words what children are really looking for: an adult who fully recognizes the finer things of life.
For more information, visit drdobsonminute.org.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. By the way, would you go out there to HopeForTheCaregiver.com? There's a donate button right there. Again, I'm doing all this by myself, and I could use the help, and I'm putting it out there. And if you had somebody coming in and making curtains for you, you'd probably write them a check. Well, I'm not asking you to write me a check, but I am asking you to help us to do what we do at Standing with Hope. Standing with Hope is the presenting sponsor of the show and the ministry that Gracie and I founded to do two things: put legs on our fellow amputees and help my fellow caregivers. I get a lot of letters and phone calls, text, and people reach out to me on social media and so forth, how this program has intercepted them from going into a bad place. So if it's done that for you, help us do it for others too, okay? And be a part of that. You know, it's a tax-deductible gift. It goes to Standing with Hope. And we're going to, like I said, we're either going to put legs on somebody or we're going to help fellow caregivers. It's that simple. We don't try to complicate it. And I would welcome the help. And if you are listening to this program and getting something out of it and taking notes or wanting to share it with somebody, that's the whole point. And you're seeing that it has value. Nobody's ever done anything like this before. And I'm asking you to go out today. You can just go out to the website, hopeforthecaregiver.com. Or straight to standingwithhope.com. Either way, and you'll see a donate button there. Be a part of it, okay? Thank you for allowing me to spend this time with you. Caregiving's hard enough, and friends don't let friends caregive alone. And so thank you for being a listener. Thank you for sharing it. Thank you for supporting it. Thank you for getting involved. And I appreciate all the notes of encouragement that I get. There are many of you that write me to tell me you're praying for me as I'm going through what I'm going through now. You would think the last year would have been enough for us to take a breather for a while, but no. And so I had a regular blood test, part of my physical, earlier this year, and my numbers came back a little bit wonky. They said, "We're going to escalate this up." So I went to a specialist. They said, "We're going to do some more blood work, get an MRI." And sure enough, there's something there, and it is cancerous. But now we caught it early, and this is going to be, there's a treatable path. I'm going to be meeting with the oncologist and radiologist here in a couple of weeks. We're waiting for one more test result to come back, and then they're going to meet, go over that. And then I meet with the surgeon, and then we're going to decide whether or not we're going to do radiation or we're going to just go ahead and just have surgery and cut it all out. We're not totally sure yet. It is treatable. We got it early. I have no symptoms. I would not have known had I not got a regular physical, which is something I recommend very much to you as my fellow caregivers, to do these things, to do what is necessary for preventative medicine. So we've caught this early enough that there are options and we're discussing those things, but it has been a bit gnarly and I'll be talking about that a little bit more. And I have an article out this weekend, as a matter of fact, where I write about that, when the caregiver gets cancer and what that does to our headspace a little bit, because it's not a situation where I could just say, okay, I'm going to go recover for a bit and take some time off. Take some time off. What does taking time off look like for me? So that's what's going on now. And so I go back to these hymns that every caregiver ought to know to sustain me, to see, okay, will this hold up here? This is not an old one. You know, normally I go with one that's 200 or 300 years old, but this one was written back in the early 1980s. And it was one of the first songs I ever heard Gracie sing. And I'm sorry that you're not going to hear her sing today because, you know, for the obvious reasons, because you're going to hear me do it. But it was written by a guy named Martin Nystrom, going through some tough times in his life. And he went on a fast, water only, for 19 days. And at the end of that time, near the end of that time, he sat down at the piano. And the Bible nearby was open to Psalm 42. And the melody, he said, just, and the words just flowed out immediately. He said he'd never intended anybody else to hear it. He just was just playing. It was very personal. And it, but once he did, it just kind of went like wildfire. And the way it's written, this is in the key of C that I'm going to play it. It's what you call a walk down. Let me go to the caregiver keyboard here. Okay, and a walk down is basically this. You just start on the tonic. So it's real simple. As the deer panteth for the water, so my soul longeth after thee. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship thee. I mean, you know this. We all know it. Nowadays, they sing it, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after thee. But I sing it with the old style, with the King James, because that's the way I originally heard it back in the early 80s. As the deer panteth for the water, so my soul longeth after thee. Desire, and I long to worship thee. Then you get this wonderful chorus. You alone are my strength, my shield. To you alone does my spirit. Desire, and I long to worship thee. And this hymn is so simple, but such a calm, reflective hymn. I mean, think about it. The guy had been fasting for 19 days, just water. And then he sat down to write this. And musically speaking, it's one of the more simple songs that you'll ever do. Like I said, it's just a walk down. As the deer panteth for the water, so my soul. It's just a major scale walking down. That's it. Now, you can add some nice chords to it, which I like to do. You know that. And those of you who do not care anything about music theory, just, I'm sorry, but there are people that listen to this program who do. And I just want to give you a few tips that you can play this at your service. So, or play it at home. As the deer panteth for, and then go to a minor 5-7 right there. The water, so my soul. That's a major seven. Longeth after thee. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship thee. I just love this. Gracie and I have sung this and performed this I don't know how many times. I mean, just, I mean, I could not count them. And we've done them in the hospital many times. We've done them in the worst times of our life. Now, why? Why? Now think about what we're saying. As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longeth after thee. You alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship thee. What are we saying here when we're having this prayer? What David was writing down, what's echoing is all this other stuff fades away. And we focus only on the things that matter. You ever been so thirsty, just parched, and then you have that cool drink of water? And this had to have been in David's mind. And how many of us as caregivers are just parched? We're just parched. And that's why I love this hymn. And it's more contemporary. But I could sit there and play this in just about any church in America. And I've played it over in Africa. I played this in the clinic there in Africa where we put prosthetic legs on people and amputees were waiting. They were singing, and they would sing this with me. And I'll play this for Gracie, and sometimes she'll just hum it. Sometimes that's all she can do is just hum it out. And this is why this is such a great hymn that every caregiver ought to know, that we ought to just embed in our hearts. By the way, in my piano lessons that I'm doing, I'm taking this song and they're making me do some strange things with it to stretch me musically. And I will tell you, it's work. I've got to actually record that and load it up as a video. And I have a camera that faces down to my keyboard so they can see my hands and see what I'm doing and make sure that I know what I'm doing and help me do it better. And it's work, but it's good work because it's pushing me. It's pushing me to develop my gifts. And that's what I want for you as well. To push you to develop the things that God has given you, skills that you have that you can enhance and work on. And that's how we're going to do it as caregivers. That's how we're going to grow. That's how we're going to do all these things. Because the demands on us are too intense for us to just survive, to just tread water. We've got to find a place of solid ground to stand on. And this hymn helps me anchor that in what's really important as I think about the things of God, as I focus on Him. And that equips me to continue having hope as a caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. Go out to the site today. Be a part of what we're doing. We'll see you next time.